I'm Kurt Benkert, and this is Pocket Presence, powered by Sleeper. Welcome back to another episode of Pocket Presence, where I take us through this time with my co-host Tyler through the Packers case study that we're about to do. Jordan Love had a breakout year last year, and it took until like week 8, 9, 10 to really get things going. And then after that, they hit fire. They caught fire, and they were rolling through the playoffs. And some even think that if they got past, was it the 49ers? I think it was the 49ers. Mm-hmm. They actually would have made it to the Super Bowl. And I'm of that belief. It would have been 49ers and Lions, teams that, I don't know, man, a lot of excitement of what could have been last year. But as we know, each year in the NFL, it's a reload, it's a rebuild, and situations are different, teams are different, and there's a lot that can change. So, Tyler, you're a Packers fan. How are you feeling about this year?
It's certainly a unique offseason to be a Packers fan, because for my entire life, I'm 25 years old now, so it's been Favre, and then it's been Rodgers, and it seems like, as I've remembered being a Packers fan, every year you go into it being like, is this the last year? Do we have to reload? It's usually like making one small tweak here, one small tweak there. The Packers, for my entire lifetime, have always been, you know, fans have always been begging for this top wide receiver prospect, your top wide receiver free agent, just to come to give Rodgers one more weapon. And this year is a totally different tone to the offseason. There's, like you described, a lot of hope. And not that there wasn't hope beforehand, but it always felt like you were hanging on to what was. And now it just feels like there is unlimited potential for this team. And that's a super exciting spot to be in as a fan in the offseason.
Yeah, man, I think I share the same sentiment. I would call myself a pseudo Packers fan. I'm an analyst now. I analyze things. I have friends on the team still. I want them to do well. And I really enjoyed my time with the Packers. So like, I want them to do well. And it's interesting when you look at this team across the board, the youngest team in the NFL, they have one player. And I saw this on social media, so someone might have to fact check me. One player over the age of 30, Preston Smith. Hmm. That's it, allegedly. Maybe they had some vets in the offseason, who knows, but they're a young team and we're two games away from the Super Bowl. So just common sense would tell you, if they just get better, in most players in the NFL, their biggest jumps are from year one to year two. They had a lot of rookie contributors on that team last year and a lot of second-year contributors on that team. Science would just tell you that this is their year, right?
Yeah, like that's what science says. I agree. This is going to be a generally positive episode, not only because we both love the Packers, but you know, we try to make these case studies as future-looking and positive as possible. I think the one thing that worries me as a fan in the back of my head, you hear this term sophomore slump thrown around, especially about a quarterback. I want to first ask you what you think that means, why you think it happens, and if you think Jordan Love is susceptible to that sort of slump.
Yeah, I'm going to say it right now. Jordan Love is not going to have a sophomore slump. He's going to improve on the last part of the season that he was just crushing it. And what I'm most excited to see is like that last half of the year, it looked like every week they got a little bit better and they got a little bit more on the same page with receiver to quarterback and O-line and third down situations and pressure situations. Like the nuances of the game that you have to all be on the same page for that are outside of the coach's hands, they started nailing that week in and week out in like high pressure situations, zero blitz, disguise, getting into the right play, doing all these things that like rookies don't do and they don't do it well typically. And it's just, you saw vet moments out of guys that were on paper, not really vets. And so that's really exciting. I mean, you have guys like Bo Melton, who people don't even talk about in the offseason, showed up in big games the entire last half of the season. Then you have Jaden Reed. Then you have Dontavian Wicks. Oh, wait, you have Romeo Doubs. You have Christian Watson, who's going to be healthy this year. Two tight ends. Again, their stud tight end, Musgrave, wasn't even their stud tight end last year. It was Kraft. So, like, you just have what I think is forming of this young, we-don't-give-a-shit team, and they're not afraid of anybody, clearly. They're too young to even know what being afraid of people looks like. And I just think they're like, all right, strap it up. Let's go. Let's go see what happens. And that's the mentality that you have to have in the NFC North if you want to have sustained success.
Most of you guys already use Sleeper for your fantasy sports leagues.
I do too. But Sleeper Picks is a whole other side of the operation that is growing fast. Sleeper Picks is now operational in over 25 different states, and playing the games are simple. You go grab a few player props that you like for that night. You pick over and under, whether it be assists, touchdowns, interceptions, rebounds, goals, whatever sport, it doesn't matter. They got a lot available. You add them to an entry. You can win up to 100 times your money for whatever you put in. And the best part is Sleeper is now matching your first time deposit up to $500 when you type in Kurt at checkout. I'll see you there.
Yeah, I want to do some research. I wonder if the sophomore slump is even a real thing or a phenomenon that is seen across the league, or if it's just something that's happened to a couple notable guys. And since it has alliteration, it's a catchy name. Like, in your experience, have you seen that happen? Like, why would that happen? Because everything we talked about it in the case study with the Texans, where guys become more unlocked and their potential becomes exponentially higher because they get to do things they weren't allowed to do in their freshman year. So it seems like if the guy's good, he's only going to get better. But still, we have this conversation around somehow he could get worse in his second year.
So I would say that, look, as long as you're not trying to go off the reservation and play so far outside of the scheme, then those enhancements help the game and they help the team. They help get coaching pushed forward in a way that, like, the coaches don't have to be perfect for you to succeed on third down. And they don't have to be perfect for you to score in the red zone, where, like, they can give you, like, the guidelines and then go let this team develop their own identity of who they're going to be that year. And that's something that we talk about all the time. The identity of a team is for that season, and it changes from week 1 to week 18 and through the playoffs. Like, the identity of this team changes. So what is the identity of the team going into this year? Well, how many guys did they lose? Who's coming back? Like, where can you take that regression from where you ended up at the end of the season, and, like, how much can you build to get back to where you just were quickly in the early part of the season? Because, again, like we say, weeks 1 through 8 are a lot different than the last 10 weeks out of the season. And some teams that struggled early, just they find their groove and they find their rhythm and they roll throughout the year. That's with the 49ers. That's what happened the season that I was there. I mean, we were like 4-3 or something like that to start the year. Then they didn't lose a game the rest of the year. And they went to the NFC Championship game. It's when Brock Purdy hurt his elbow. And at the beginning of that year, the conversations in the locker room were a lot different than when you were winning every single game. And it's just funny how the identity of a team can change and morph. Like, man, we got to figure this shit out. Like, we're not doing this, we're not doing that. And then it's just like winning cures everything. And so how quickly can this team get into that rhythm of, like, we don't need to knock off rust. We've knocked off our rust in training camp and we've knocked it off in preseason. We don't need weeks 1, 2, 3, and 4 to knock off rust and then start 2-2 or 1-3. So that's my question to them is, what does the product look like week 1? And obviously you go through and you watch training camp, like, what's the product look like right now? There's some things that need to change, right? Like the defense, they have a new defensive coordinator, they have all this stuff, but what's the product week 1? And then what improvements can be made from a schematic standpoint, from a player ownership standpoint, up until like week 10, where you're like, all right, we're ironing things now to go to the playoffs. And again, that division, dude, it's the NFC North. It's no matter what people want to say each year, it's going to be a dogfight. I don't care how bad the Bears were the year before, they're going to be a tough team to play against. I don't care how good the Lions were. Not every game is going to be a cakewalk this year. And then you look at the Vikings. I'm high on Sam Darnold. I think he can play football, and I think he's going to be in a good system that supports him with a stud receiver and a really good running back. Like, I don't know, man. The Packers will be better by experience this year. But are things going to go the way that they want them to on the field? Because it's never the game's never the same. It's always changing, and every team in the division's changing. So I'm excited, man.
I think that's me too. I think that's a really good point, where we could be sitting here, the draft is a week from today. We could be sitting here and the whole landscape of the NFC North, quarterback-wise, is going to look very different. We know that the Bears are probably going to take Caleb Williams. Seems like the Vikings might make a move to trade up for one of these top 3 or 4 guys. So where we sit here and we're, as Packer fans, super optimistic about, you know, our young core, that's just going to happen across the rest of the division. Yeah. And it's not going to be this given that Jordan Love is going to be the best quarterback. I think as a Packers fan, I want that to be true, but there are just going to be some realities that the division is going to look different in about a week. You said something about your time on the 49ers. Yeah, you said something about your time on the 49ers. 4-3 start, you made that change, and they rattled off a bunch of wins. What is it in the DNA of a team? Because I think one thing you called out, the vibe of this team just does seem different. And this is totally from a outsider's perspective. You've been in the locker room with Jordan and Aaron. You've bridge that transition, or you at least are way more aware of it than I am. And it seems like the vibe is just different around this team. And so is it a vibe thing? Is it a personnel thing that a team has the ability to bounce back if they start slow? Because we saw that last year where maybe it was just youth, ignorance. They bounce back after not a great start. So what is it in a team that allows them to do that? Or a lot of times teams just totally go off the deep end.
Yeah, I think last year the team was so young that they didn't know how to win. And they didn't know how to close out situations. They weren't a good situational football team in the first half of the year. And they'd have untimely missed blocks, untimely interceptions, untimely wrong routes ran. Like just nobody, you weren't playing as a team. And I think they learned over that first 2 months of the season that defense can get away with that. Defense can have a blown assignment and maybe the quarterback doesn't go that way. It just happens. If you miss a block, if you run the wrong route and you're the first read, like the offense needs all 11 on every play damn near to be successful. Like nobody can take plays off. So when you have so many young guys and the chances of you blowing a assignment are higher, it's going to look like a really bad product until you at least are just doing what you're being told to do from the coaches. At the end of the day, if you have a protection that's sliding to the right with the three-man slide and you have your man side on the left side, but your guard goes the wrong way, then now your running back's responsible with blocking the nose tackle, that's a problem. And good luck reading out 1 to 2 to 3 when the first two guys are covered and trying to hit your backside over. Like that's real life how it works in the NFL. And then they're like, oh, this line can't block, or oh, he's like doesn't have enough time, or he can't get through his progressions. Well, no, if one person just actually did what he was supposed to do by the scheme, he'd at least put a body on a body and you're going to get the ball off. And so those were the mistakes they were making early in the year. They weren't even giving themselves a fighting chance because they were blowing so many assignments. So now you get this young group that's not blowing assignments, that's actually talented, that the guys talent-wise are playing better than their draft slots would say that they would. Now you're like cooking with like something real there. And I think for them this year, how do you manage being that team that is young and knows how to have fun and doesn't give a shit who's lined up across from you, and you're going to be the team that says, strap it up, it's about to go, but also flip the switch and be like, I'm prepared, I've done my job, I know all my assignments. Like there's a fine line to straddle between being a showy team that's young and has fun and lunch pail team that shows up for work. And I think that's the cool mixture that I believe we're going to find out about them this year. I think they have that in them to be that team that's prepared, has fun, and just lets it all loose on Sundays. And I think we saw that a few times last year, especially in the playoffs, where it was like, dude, we're doing our job. These big plays are happening out of nowhere. Like nobody's like Superman. It's just they're happening. And so you have to have things that go right, but I'm really excited to see that identity form. And I think that starts with Jordan and his demeanor, and it trickles down to the rest of the offense. And then the defense, who are we going to get on that side of the ball this year? I think the defensive coordinator, he talks a high game. I like how he's approaching it, at least in the media so far. I want to see their preparedness. I want to see their assignments. I want to see I want to see them not be beat pre-snap, because last year on defense, there were so many times that on 3rd and 3, 3rd and 4, 3rd and 5, 3rd and 6, that you just freaking knew, well, fuck, it's a first down because we're not Preston lined Smith up right.
Lined up against, oh my God. I mean,
yeah, and it's a lot of times not even the players, dude. It's not the players that are, no, like, the players are doing what they're coached to do. And like when you have players being like, what the fuck are we calling this play for on 3rd and 6? That's when you have a problem. And I think that's one of the things that, look, I'm glad that they finally moved on. And Joe Barry hit a good defensive outing, I'd say, in the playoffs, especially against the Cowboys. But like the consistency throughout the year, there were too many questionable things that went on that same thing as we were talking about the offensive side. If the defense just lines up and puts a body on a body, you're not going to get ripped for an easy 5-yard completion. That is like the most deflating thing in the world. There's nothing where, I mean, we do this in Madden. Like what happens when you line up and you just give somebody a free first down? It's like, oh shit, here we go. Where, okay, if he beats me man to man, okay, he's not going to beat me man to man every single play. So that's what I'm looking for on the defensive side of the ball this year. Let's be competitive. I think just with our alignment.
Yeah, I just remember cornerback one, Preston Smith, happened far too many times. Where, like you mentioned, 3rd and 1, somehow we got. He's a rush guy. You know, he shouldn't be out there. Like on Justin Jefferson too. The amount of screenshots that I'm sure people are well aware of are humorous. And you're right, Joe Barry almost saved his job at the end. I think there is like a difference in expectation this year too. To your point about them being able to show up and straddling that line between being the young team and being a prepared team, they're not going to catch teams off guard as much this year, right?
No, no chance. And that's some of it too, where like, I think people are going to know who Dontayvion Wicks is. You know, I think they're going to know what Jaden Reed's skill set is. I think they're going to know, hey, if we're pressing Romeo Doubs, we should probably shade the safety over there. At least you would think. But I think as long as the Packers stick to not trying to force the ball to anybody, like this is what I would say. This is how you know it's going to be a good year. If every single week you don't know who's going to eat on that offense, they're going to be really freaking good this year. They need to run the ball with Josh Jacobs. That's one. But if you don't know as a fan who's going to eat that week, and you don't even know who to put money on to get the receptions or any of that other stuff, they're going to be good because they're going to be unpredictable. And I think that's what makes the 49ers so good. Every single week, you don't know if it's going to be a Deebo game. You don't know if it's going to be an Ayuk game. Some games, Kittle goes off for 100 yards. Some games, he has one catch for 15. And the only person that you know is going to get fed is Christian McCaffrey. So I think that the Packers, with all of their talent, like, yes, you do scheme up plays for certain guys, but man, just be willing to go through your progressions. Be willing to just not be so particular on alignments and where you're moving guys in the formation. That's a big thing that I think in Atlanta we did a really bad job of when I was with the Falcons. You knew when Julio Jones was going to get a strike route. You knew when Calvin Ridley was going to get a blaze out. And there were tendencies that we just never broke. So if the Packers can break their tendencies, get guys in all different spots doing all different things, I think it's going to be a really special year.
Let's say we're sitting here next week and the NFC North quarterback-wise looks like Jared Goff, Jordan Love, Caleb Williams, and Drake May / J.J. McCarthy. Those seem to be the two potential guys. What gives you confidence that Jordan Love over the next 5 to 10 years can be the best quarterback in that division?
Oh, man. Well, he has all of the arm talent to do it. He has the leadership ability to do it. He has the poise to do it. He has an understanding of the system. And I think that the Packers, being the way they are, the way that they have their team built, like they have the most talented receiving room in the league by age. Some of these other receiving rooms, although they are super talented, are going to look extremely different in the next year or two. Maybe even quicker than that, right? Like there's guys that are going to be moving on to new contracts, this and that. Like with how successful the Packers receiving room is, at how young they are, and with the guys that have been able to step up that are on 4-year contracts in year one as rookies, like you're going to see them have a chance for a year or two from now, go and get a top receiver in the draft and just buff it up. Like they've bought themselves time by hitting on these receivers. And some other teams, I mean, you can look at the Bears, they have Keenan Allen, they have DJ Moore, and who else do they have?
Oh, man.
They're going to draft somebody probably. Like, Keenan's almost done playing. Who knows how many more years he's going to play? You look at other receiving rooms like Justin Jefferson and Addison. Is Jefferson leaving? Is he going to get traded? Like, what's the deal there? Then you look at the Dolphins. Tyreek Hill said he's retiring after this contract's up. Who knows? He's a jokester. But, like, there are a lot of receiving rooms, in my opinion, that are special but have question marks in a year or two from now. The Packers receiving room is special and young and has 3 to 4 years of, I would say, being able to be a core together. And so that is what I'm, I think, most excited for, is to see how does it shake out? Who do they add to the room in a year or two? Maybe even this year, do they add a third or fourth round guy, or even a second round guy that's a deep receiver class? So I think when you have good depth that's young, man, you buy yourself time as a decision maker and a GM to be able to make the best decision for the team instead of having to rush into a pick.
I can already see the dialogue playing out where people are arguing halfway through the season who wide receiver one is in that room. And I thought you brought up a really good point that I want you to explain a little further here, where the question was posed by Sleeper, who is Green Bay's wide receiver one? And I thought you broke it down in an interesting way. So I just want to give you the floor to do that.
Yeah, so I look at one from the inside. I know how they like to scheme things up in certain situations. But the way that they have their receiving workload, I'd say, broken down is if Romeo Doubs is pressed up man-to-man with no safety help and he's got a go ball or a stop route or a scout route, which is 10-yard out route, he's probably getting the ball. He catches most things thrown his direction. His catch radius is insane, and his contested catch rate is super high. Whereas if you get a guy like Dontavian Wicks, that's like maybe it's third and three. Maybe you're in the red zone. You need a big body guy that's going to be able to lean on somebody and separate a little bit. Or even if he has somebody draped on him, he can kind of go up and get it. He's a big frame. If you've ever seen him work out, like upper body like a T, looks like a swimmer almost up top. Like he's got a big range to catch contested passes. Very similar to Dobbs, but in a different light. So he's more of the red zone guy. Maybe some of the third down guys. Jaden Reed. Lightning. When he gets the ball in his hands in space, it's dangerous. So I'm looking at him like, okay, if it's zone and you know he's got a climb route, if he catches a climb route at 18 to 22 on the opposite hash in rhythm, in time on your first hitch, off a seven-step drop, he actually might score. Where most guys, maybe they get tackled for like a 35-yard gain. And so he's that slash and dash zone receiver that can find the coverage, find the soft spot, and then take it the house, take it the distance. And then you have Christian Watson, injured a lot last year, but he's the guy that if he gets over the top, low safeties, say they're playing quarters and the safeties are playing and biting on the run action, your DBs have outside leverage, that's a post up. If he gets even, he is gone. All you have to do is deliver a good catchable ball and he might score. And they also like to run a lot of play action with crossers and posts over the top. They have routes where they run deep hooks that pull the safety and go behind him even if it's one high. That's going to come into play this year with Josh Jacobs. They went without Aaron Jones for a lot of last season, didn't really have much of a run game. I think they're going to get back to some of these big play action shots that came alive late in the year, earlier, one with Christian Watson healthy and assuming Josh Jacobs is able to really ground and pound. So like each one of those guys, it's like, look, dude, it's very defense dependent of who are they playing? How are they set up? What's their way of trying to attack this Packers offense? Because you kind of feel it out in the first drive or two. What's their game plan going to be on defense? And then, okay, let's dial it up. Then, okay, they're playing soft cover three. Let's get some climbs for Jaden Reed. Oh, they want to go press man? Cool. Dobbs, it's your turn. You're up. Hey, we're just going to take 5-6 yards all the way down the field, get to the red zone. All right, we're going to be having zone defense probably. Wicks is going to get the ball. You're going to have to post up, play some basketball. And it's just like, that's how I see those guys. And we didn't even talk about the tight ends. Like the tight ends are talented. So this team is truly receiver by committee. And I don't think they need a wide receiver one. Does it help having a Justin Jefferson? Hell yeah, it does. But these guys have been able to eat without that. And I think all of them in their own right have a claim to the title.
Do you think it's hard for those guys to be in a room like that? I think our notion of a wide receiver is kind of the Stephon Diggs type where I'm not getting my targets. I want to go somewhere where I'm going to get my targets. But now you have this young group that, dude, I mean, last year it worked. So like, how hard is that for those guys to set aside their ego and just be okay being a part of a committee like that?
Yeah, I think until contract talks come around, like some of these guys that will be going into, you know, when they get to year four and maybe after that, like they'll be looking to go somewhere else to get their, you know, $45 million contract like Darnell Mooney did, just to go climb the ladder a little bit, get more targets, be a little bit more of a guy. But right now these guys are young. And this very much feels like a really exciting, like an LSU type of receiving core, like a college receiving core where it's like, dude, everybody's good. These are all, you know, 4 or 5-star athletes in college. They were not in college, but as of right now, that's what they're playing like. And okay, so who's going to go get theirs? And I think it's like friendly. I think they all push each other. And you've heard that sentiment from their room. I mean, dude, it's just a special thing that we're watching unfold within that group. And they have a good receivers coach who obviously has been able to learn from and coach with Davante Adams for a long time. And so when you have a guy like that that's in the room that brings that presence, there's things that you can trickle down and feed to these other guys that are young, even though Davante Adams isn't in the room. There's a lot of principles of how they play the game that are passed down, you know, just from Packers lineage.
Yeah, you mentioned those tight ends. I think as a fan, this is what gets me most excited, because my entire life we've been cycling through the Martellus Bennett, Mercedes Lewis, Big Dog. Yep. I get why those guys were brought in, you know, kind of Aaron Rodgers favored type of guys. But now we have these young, dynamic guys at the position, and it seems like it adds another layer to this offense. But what do they actually bring?
Yeah, well, Tucker Kraft is so efficient and effective, and he is a friendly target. And I'm not talking about like his catch radius or any of that stuff. A friendly target, meaning how does he run routes and how's his body positioning? What's his frame to catch when you're throwing a flat route that like maybe you have to lead him a little bit upfield? Like some guys have a small miss window even though they have long arms, and he's very friendly to throw to. And he just always seems to be fluid and really efficient with his movements. And so he's a good yak guy. Like, you throw a flat route, he turns it up for 8 to 10, and it's a first down, where some guys you'd throw it to would have to turn all the way around and slow down to catch it, and they're only going to get 4 yards. So as a quarterback, knowing that I can take a flat route to that guy when he's in the game and he could potentially get a first down, I'm not going to pass up that to throw a slant that goes behind it in a dragon concept and like something that matches that route. And so you would see Jordan drop back sometimes on third downs and hitch, and know he's going to the tight end as he's dropping back. But he's willing to take that extra time in the pocket to let coverage sink and drop it down to him. And I just think when you know you have that guy, it's like, dang, 3rd and 8, a check down actually might get us a first down here to that guy, where some guys are like, 3rd and 8, no chance. And then you look at Musgraves, who I think is the higher ceiling guy. Some of the catches I think he can start making in the red zone, in the seams, like off the play action boots with the wheel throwback routes, like he's a guy that can take it the distance. And so I'm excited to see how more so he progresses. I think with Kraft, you know what you're getting. I think with Musgrave, there's some unknown there, but the unknown's exciting. And so can he put it all together this year? Can he stay healthy? Can he like become a more coordinated athlete? Because he's a good athlete, but he just would stumble a lot last year. But that's just, he looked like a guy that grew too fast, to be honest. And I think a good offseason away from the game and just focusing on training is probably going to do him well. And we'll probably see a better player coming into this next season.
Do you have comps for either of them? I don't remember seeing them on the field a lot together last year. So if you give Kraft or Musgrave their own comps, what would that be?
I don't even want to go there and say, like you obviously hope that every tight end duo is like a Gronk and Aaron Hernandez type on the field. Right. And I do think that like Musgrave has a little more Gronk to him, where it's like kind of unorthodox, kind of like a little sketchy looking at times, but like, oh wait, he's making plays. And then I think Kraft is just a slower, smooth, like straight line guy that is not afraid to jump over people either. And he's scrappy. So I don't know, maybe those guys over the next 3 to 4 years, we're looking at them like, damn, this is a good ass dynamic tight end duo.
I love that.
But it's still too early.
Yeah, that's fair. For 12 minutes, though, we did have the best running back room in the league, at the very least, before
we
shipped Jones of all time. I would put it up there, like in the last 10 years, if we had Jones and Jacobs. That would have been a punch. But now we have Josh Jacobs and A.J. Dillon. Where do you see that duo stacking up with the rest of the league?
Yeah, dude. I'm excited to see like AJ come in the game and be like a spell when the team, like when the game and the other defense is like really tired. Like, because I think that the way that Josh Jacobs runs is like, if Aaron Jones is over here and AJ Dillon's over here on run styles, I think Josh Jacobs is like here. And so I think that Josh Jacobs will be able to take some of the load that AJ Dillon typically got. In short yardage situations and like just kind of ground and pound, that when AJ was coming in last year, you knew what it was when Aaron Jones was off the field. You knew what AJ was there for. Where I think that this actually might help AJ go in situations where he can be a little bit more versatile. Like there were games, maybe it was 2 to 3 years ago, he had like 100 yards receiving, like AJ Dillon did. And people don't look at him as a receiving back, but like he's capable. But when you have Aaron Jones and that's his thing, you're going to take AJ out of the situations that might be a little easier to get yards. So I would hope that this opens up the versatility of AJ a little bit more to just be a true number two back instead of a power back. That's what I would hope for him. So I'm excited to see how it shakes out. And I think, it's usage.
Yeah, that's interesting. I feel like you hear about the change of pace back, and on paper, it seemed like Jones and Dillon filled those roles where Dillon was the true bruiser and Jones was the spread out, you know, outside kind of guy. But it's interesting that you make that point where it's like, hey, it was almost too predictable when Jones came in. And maybe he can be a bit more versatile in this role since his style is more closely related to Jacobs. That's interesting. I haven't thought about that.
Yeah, I think it'll help.
One quick note before we move on to the offensive line. We've talked a lot about Aaron Jones and what he means to this team. We've talked a lot about it. What do you think the Packers are going to miss most about Jones being in this offense?
I think his energy. Like there's, and again, I think that Josh Jacobs can bring that energy on the field, like that electricness on the field. I think personality wise, they're entirely different people. But there's just something about Aaron Jones and his like aura being around that like he's super positive. He picks guys up. He makes the game feel more like a game than a job. And he does a really good job of like mentoring and pulling along the young guys. And I think that Aaron Jones was needed last year for that with how young the team was. I think the team now has seen what type of, you know, element to the game that he brought. And so maybe you'll find some other guys that develop into the next Aaron Joneses. And I'm not talking about at running back, but that persona that pull people along. I think you might find some more of those guys come out because that void is now there. So they're going to miss him. I know when they see him twice a year, there's going to be nothing but love for him. And I'm excited to see how this dude, it's just, it never fails. The NFC North will always find a way to pick and pull. But I'm also excited kind of that he stayed in the division because I think that for him, he's got more ball to play and I think he's going to run his ass off and he's going to play really well.
Totally. You could see him having that same effect in Minnesota next year where they're probably going to bring in a young quarterback. Like, unfortunately, he could be that guy for him and maybe that was part of their thought process.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay, offensive line, Bakhtiari gone. Mm-hmm. Didn't really have him a lot last year anyway. It seems like the Packers can just grow these guys out of nowhere. I mean, I just remember growing up and every year, first round pick, it was edge, corner, tackle, it felt like, which is really unsexy, but it seems like now across 25 years when you're trying to build a
Bakhtiari,
really good franchise.
Very sexy, very sexy.
I mean, it's true, but when you're like a 12-year-old kid and you want a wide receiver or a running back or a tight end, you don't realize that what smart franchises do is draft those traditionally unsexy positions and then turn them into superstars like David Bakhtiari was. How do you see this offensive line existing without him?
Yeah, I think they're going to be great. I don't think that this is the thing with David, dude. Anytime he's on the field and available, he is a checked box. You never have to question what's going on. You know that side's locked down. So you can start sliding protection away from his side. You can know that he's going to lock somebody up one-on-one. He doesn't need as many chips. Like he is a checked box. You do not have to question anything when he's on the field. Now, the Packers have been able to find a way to have really good production at the O-line position without him. And I will say in the background, like Bakhtiari was in meetings, and I'm not going to say, I don't know how much he was in there last year while he was going through his surgery, but even when I was there 2 years ago and he was dealing with his knee injury, he was in and a part of it and teaching and like happily giving back. And I think that those guys in that room would say the same thing. And not to mention, he had a lot to do with the culture of the O-line room, how they played, bringing those guys together. So I think that stuff's going to be missed. But now it's somebody else's turn to step up and take that role, not just on the field, but off the field. And I think they probably already started to do that last year. Again, though, they lost. I think Runyon went to a new team this year. They've got some guys that moved around, but I would be looking for them to add some more. Obviously, like they try to do every single year. They are a team that believes in having a stable and never wants to get too thin. But I think they'll be just fine. And I also think that, look, Jordan is such an asset to that O-line room by being able to change protection, change plays, like getting them into good looks. He's not a rookie. And sometimes you have to overcompensate for rookies with your O-line play, with your communication, but Jordan will be able to pick up some of the slack in getting them in the right looks and making sure they're sliding the right way and doing all the things to help the guys, especially if there's any injuries that come up this year.
Switching over the defensive side of the ball, not as young as the offense, although you mentioned, I'm just going to take it for a fact that we don't have a guy under or over the age of 30, except for Preston Smith. I think the big change here is obviously the defensive coordinator. I'll see how long it takes for Jeff Hafley to become the most unpopular man at Green Bay. That always seems to happen with Packers defensive coordinators is as soon as shit hits the fan, you're pointing the finger at the DC. What generally, you know, change-wise are you hoping that Hafley is going to make from the Barry defense? We talked about it a bit at the beginning of the episode, but let's really break it down.
Yeah, so I just hope that what he does more than anything is gets us into four down rush situations and plays more man coverage. We have guys at DB that can play man coverage. We have a guy that requested to follow stud receivers every single week in Jair Alexander, and he was not able to do that because they did not allow him to do that. Go be like some of the better defenses in the league and strap up and go make them earn their yards the hard way. This disguise shell coverage, while it's good for some things and you can say that it helps stop the play action game from here, like here and there, like, dude, let's just go play football. let's stop trying to be pretty. Let's stop playing so far off. Let's go get in people's faces because we have the talent to do that on defense. The most expensive defense in the league, I believe, per cap, right? They're at least top five.
Okay.
Yeah, the cap number to defensive spend with the Packers is insane.
We're investing a lot in defense, is what you're saying.
Yeah, investing a whole lot. And we're not even like cutting them loose. We're not like playing sticky man coverage on third and short or third and medium. Sure. We're like playing soft zone. So like, let's not do that this year. Let's go do the things that I know an offensive coordinator, a quarterback, and receiver does not necessarily want to see on third down and in the red zone. Like, let's go do that. And I think that over the course of a year, like, yes, yeah, some big plays will be given up, but the easy plays that we've been giving for so long with that organization should be gone. And I think over time that will make the offense play better. I think it'll make the defense play better. I think it will just bring the whole team along if you know that on third down, we're going to at least be competitive. That's all we're asking for. Who gives a shit if somebody gets beaten man coverage over the top? Fix it in film. Change the safety's alignment a little bit. Like, keep telling dude to jam him and to get in his face. And I don't know, man. I just want to see pressure. I want to see havoc. I want to see chaos. Like, I want to see a team that's willing to risk it on defense because I'd rather them lose that way than whatever the hell we've been seeing. And you look at some of these other, like, look at Flores, dude. Flores, if you're going to beat him, you got to beat him zero blitzing him. And you know it. He knows it. The team knows it. What's up? Like, I want to see that mentality out of this star-studded Packers defense for the first time in a long time.
Do you think guys play differently if they're given that freedom?
Hell yes. And I think that defense has the attitude to play like that. And I honestly, it's just like, I look at it this way. We had dudes on that defense that were ready to strap it up and just get into a brawl. But you're making them fight with like toddler boxing gloves. And these dudes don't even want gloves on at all. Like, they just want to go get it. And you're requiring them to play with like the like rock'em sock'em, like big ass blow up boxing gloves. And they were asking for the opposite. Like, they just wanted to go brawl. And I think now there are no excuses as long as that's what Halfley brings to this. Like, I hope it's like a hunt, don't get hunted mentality. Like, let's go get it. And that, dude, it's one thing to like force an interception off of like a quarterback that had a tip ball or whatever, but to like smack a guy and force an errant throw that gets picked brings a whole different level of juice to both sides of the ball. And then that quarterback has to play differently the next time that he's up. Like, there's nothing like, okay, if I'm playing against a too high shell defense and I know that I am in a passing situation, like if I throw an interception because I tried to rip it in a window that I shouldn't have, like, I'm like, okay, shit, well, I'll get it next drive. I'll just be a little bit safer, whatever. But if I'm throwing interceptions versus man coverage because I'm getting hit and I'm inaccurate and like I don't have an answer for the pressure, that affects me the rest of the game. That affects the quarterback next week that's preparing for me, knowing that that's the type of game it's going to be. Like, do not let these quarterbacks sit back and play 7-on-7 against you, because that's what it was. So let's just go not do that next year.
Especially these young guys, I'm sure. I mean, we're going to have four games this year, presumably against two rookie quarterbacks. I'm assuming that Darnold isn't going to start the two games against the Packers. But let's just say Vikings, Bears both have rookie quarterbacks. I'm assuming a punch you in the mouth kind of defense is going to play to our advantage against some younger guys.
You have to, and you cannot show up like we did against the, I keep saying we, like I'm not there. You cannot show up like you did against the Panthers last year with Bryce Young struggling all year long and then giving him all day to throw and put up 30 points on you. That's the last thing that can happen. NFC player of the week. I mean, that's impressive. Baker Mayfield, NFC player of the week. That's impressive.
Yeah.
And you just have to like reverse walk back of like when I was in the room with those guys and we were talking about the defense we were playing that week, you lay the first thing you do when you get in the room, the OC is like, all right, this is the type of week it's going to be. You get this super big broad stroke because you haven't, most of the time it's a new opponent, unless it's a visual opponent, you haven't watched film yet on exactly what they do, but the OCs and stuff, like they all watch it before the players do. And then the players come in, reset. You have like a quick little whatever intro to it that you may watch on your off day, but like Wednesday is time to get after it. First thing you do, this is what we're dealing with on open down. So first and second down, this is the type of structure they like to play in. Hey, this is our problem guy this week, Aaron Donald. Like, we're going to have some protection help for him. We're going to run certain plays at him. Hey, by the way, third downs, this is what they like to do. They like to play nickel double A. They're going to zero you anytime, anywhere. Like, they'll give you the full scouting report legitimately, or field report if you're in the military, of what is going to happen. And then you dive into the details. And I'm like, dude, if I was on the other side of the ball preparing for the Packers defense of what we saw last year, look, dude, you're going to have a lot of time. They're going to try to roll coverage. They're going to play a lot of too high, and they're going to try to disguise and trick you. But you're going to have time to go through your reads. That's what I would have said. And it's like, okay, cool. So like, take a deep breath when I'm dropping back, because I'm going to have a little more time to process. That's not how you want guys to play quarterback. Like, that's how you get ripped up by guys like Matt Stafford, and you let rookies throw for 300. It's just like, that's the easy way to do it. At least lose the hard way.
Yeah. My smooth brain analysis of the defensive coordinator change, at the very least, is Halfley is a younger guy, and it seems like the defensive side of the football across the league, I don't think this is a Packers specific problem, just takes longer to catch up to this culture that you and I have talked about a lot, which is just on the offensive side of the ball, just get the ball in your playmaker's hands. Like when you watch Mike yep. McDaniel down in Miami, like Tyreek Hill gets the ball in so many different ways, right? I think the Packers did a great job of this with Jaden Reed last year. He got the ball in so many different ways. Whereas on the defense, you're right. It seems like for whatever reason, maybe it's just older coaches or an older way of thinking, they're just stuck in this, like, it has to be my thing, has to be my system. I'm not going to let the guys just go out there and play. Like, it seems like there's just more restrictions on the defensive side of the ball.
Totally. It is, dude. And the game's changing so much. Like, the way that offensive coordinators are attacking and preparing each week, where can we get our easy completions? That's like number one. What are our easy run plays that like give us the best chance? Where are our easy completions so that if we need 5 yards on second and 10, we can get it to get in third manageable? And then from that, where are our shots off of our run plays? Like, okay, then our third down package. Like, what are we working with? Third and two to four, heavy man. Okay, what type of man? And like, they play in plug, they blitzing. What's the deal? Third and, you know, 5 to 7, 5 to 8. Okay, maybe we'll get a little bit more zone, a little disguise, whatever. Like, that's the actual process of preparing for teams. And like, dude, all offenses want to do is get the ball to their playmakers in space at like a high percentage. Like, an offensive coordinator is going to call a zone beater to get the ball in his guy's hands 90% of the time if he knows he's going to get that. So, and he's like, these quarterbacks are going to get the ball out in rhythm on time for the most part, and they're going to get 6 yards before somebody's touched versus that type of defense. Like, I just think some defensive coordinators, the ones that really have it figured out, are the ones that are putting themselves in the OC shoes, seeing it from their perspective, seeing how they're preparing their game plans, and then working back from that, where the guys that are just, this is what we do, this is how we've always done it, we just got to adjust to what they do. Like, dude, these offenses are evolving. The rules are skewed in their favor. And at the end of the day, offenses are going to score points. It is what it is. So if I'm an OC or a head coach of a team, I want my counterpart on the defense to be a wreck havoc defense, a create turnovers defense. They may score some points, but we're going to steal you 2 to 3 possessions. And stealing possessions in the NFL, winning the turnover battle is more important than just like the amount of points scored or not scored. If you can get 3 extra possessions and you're an average offense on like 2 to 3 extra possessions a game and you're an average offense, you're going to win most of your games. That's just the way it goes. Teams that win the turnover battle, they win most games. I think it's like 90% of the time that you win the turnover battle, you win the game. So holy shit, let's work backwards from that. How do we create turnovers on defense? You got to not sit back and just let them pick you apart.
Yeah. I think the exciting part about this defense is, you know, we could walk through all the names. A lot of good, it's not like there's a lack of talent on the defense. And so even if they're, I don't know, top half the league, you tell me, even if they're 10th best in the league, just by yards or by points, the offense is good enough to pick them up. They just can't be bottom half the league like they have been the last 4 years.
That's it, dude. Like, the offense is good enough to just take a middle of the road defense yards wise. Like, let's go look right now. Like,
it's really interesting. 2023. Actually,
these are the teams. It is an interesting list. So you have the Giants, who had 31 turnovers forced. What was their problem last year? Their offense sucked ass. Their defense was a problem last year. If their offense can do anything, like, they're not just going to be some walkover team this year in that division. Then you have the Baltimore Ravens, who they were the number one team in the NFL. They led the league in turnovers, which then gave the Ravens offense time to just churn the clock out. They were winning the time of possession game. Then you have the Buffalo Bills, who, again, their defense 30 turnovers forced, and they won 11 games last year. They struggled early in the year with turnovers on offense. They were just turning the ball over all over the place. In the last like 7-8 weeks of the season, they turned it on offense, but their defense played well enough to keep them around with how horrendous their offense was playing. And then you have the Saints. The Saints defense, 29 turnovers. But what was their problem all year? Their offense was ass. Their offense could not move the ball. Then you have the Chicago Bears, same thing. Their defense was amazing, 28 turnovers forced. And we were saying it all of last year. If their offense could do anything, their defense is really good. And that's what I'm kind of like, yo, the Bears might be a problem this year. If they repeat anything that they did last year on defense and have just some sort of an uptick on offense, they're going to win those 5-7 games that they barely lost last year. That's the difference. And so then after them, you have the Browns, 49ers, Steelers, Jets. Like, that's all of those defenses I remember watching them last year. Like, yo, if their offenses do anything, these teams are going to be good. And about 60 to 70% of those teams had good offenses. Right. And so the one thing I do know is you cannot win a Super Bowl with a shit-ass defense. So let's go to the very other end of the spectrum and see. I don't know if it gives you all of them. We're going to see some of the teams that were towards the bottom last year in turnovers. And these are the teams that we talked about all year long. Like, man, if their defenses could just ever figure it out, their offenses are doing enough. You have the Eagles. Their defense was just miserable last year. The Commanders' defense was miserable last year. The Packers, only 18 forced turnovers. Okay, think of it this way. The Packers had 18 forced turnovers. The Giants had 31. The Giants had 13 more turnovers forced than the Packers. And a turnover forced is typically a really good swing and field position. How many times would the Pack, how many more points would the Packers score if they got 13 more possessions off of turnovers last year? Like, that's a lot of points with a decent offense. You have the Chargers defense at 21, the Vikings defense at 22, Raiders 22. Like, now we're starting to get into the middle of the pack a little bit in the mid 20s, but like, I'm looking at the bottom of this list and I'm looking at the top of this list without even looking back at the film and being like, damn, my sentiment of these teams was, it was just that. The top teams on defense, I'm like, damn, if their offense could do anything, they could make a Super Bowl run.
It's kind of an interesting list when you look at teams that you think could make a pop this year. I guess assuming everything would be the same, the Bears, I think, are a really good call out. And this is not a novel take that the Bears offense could perform better. They're going to be a good team this year because how good that defense was. But I think even a team like the Giants aren't being talked a lot about as taking a leap this year. And for a lot of reasons, right? Like, there's no reason to believe their offense is going to be better this year than it was last year. But you start to look at this list. I mean, if teams like the Saints or like even the Bills just could have the more Jets, consistency on defense. The another great example, the Jets, right?
The Jets can have 27 forced turnovers, dude.
Right. It's crazy. So
insane. The Packers, they were just losing games, letting up 10 points.
Yeah. The Packers just need to be in that stratosphere. They don't need to be the top, but if they're in that stratosphere, you know what the offense is going to do. That's a known quantity. The defense just needs to, again, be top 15, top 10. And I think you have a dangerous team.
Yeah, dude. Let's just say this. If the Packers force anywhere from like 6 to 8 more turnovers next year, that would put them in the middle of the pack. These are some of the teams that had the middle of the pack turnovers on defense. Don't even need to know how many yards given up. Just turnovers on defense and associated offenses that were doing pretty well. You have the Lions, 23 turnovers forced. That's 5 more throughout the course of the year. And they were that close to being over the Lions by the end of the season. Like, these turnovers are, this is the number one stat in my opinion. I don't give a shit what anybody talks about in football. Turnovers. If you can create turnovers, offenses are going to find ways to score points unless you're the Giants. But you have the Texans, 24 turnovers forced. That's only 6 more, playoff team. You have the Colts, 24. They made a late run. The Bucks, 26. They made it to the playoffs. The Bengals just barely missed it, but their offense sucked with Joe Burrow early in the year. And when he, before he was like actually out, they were not good. Got the Cowboys 26, the Dolphins 27. Like, they're just a little bit better havoc creating defense this year for the Packers could win them the division, but they're going to have to do it that way. They cannot stay the same on defense and expect to win the division.
Hmm. Do you have a? We're gonna close on this. Do you have a? What would be a disappointing season for the Packers, and what would be a successful season for the Packers? I have a feeling I know the direction you'll go with the success. But to you, if the Packers don't do this, win this many games, achieve this in the playoffs, you know what would you be disappointed by?
I think if the Packers, I think for the Packers, not winning the division would be a disappointment. I think you look at the Lions, and the Lions are going to be a good team, but they also blundered some situational football. So like I'm seeing some like chinks in the armor for the Lions a little bit, but they are still the top dog in the division right now. They have on paper the best players. They have a really consistent quarterback. They have their defense is suspect, but I'm assuming they'll get better in the draft. Missing the playoffs would be a disaster. I think not winning the division would be a little bit of a disappointment. Then you're in that wild card. Here we go, road dogs again. But I think a success is winning a home or two playoff game in Lambeau. Hmm. That would be a success. I think if you get a home, if you win the division and you win your first game in the playoffs, that's a successful season with how young the team is. And then, like, I don't know how they can get that splash this year to go like push them over the edge. I don't see what could push them as the major favorite. But like, look, man, maybe you are a game-changing receiver next year away, or a game-changing defensive player next year. I don't think they're going to make any of those moves this year. Maybe they do it at the trade deadline. Like, I just who is that one guy that can change the course of the season? They don't have him yet. They think maybe that's Josh Jacobs. I don't necessarily think that can be a running back in the league today, in today's age. Unless it's Derrick Henry of the Ravens. Like, I think that pushes them a little bit over. But I'm like, damn, dude, could they get this, like, can they get a Myles Garrett somehow? Can they, not saying that he's available, but like,
sure.
Who's that guy that you're like, oh shit, they got him and we don't know what they're going to do about him? There's one guy on the roster that I think can be him, and I think that's Rashawn Gary. I think he can be that guy. Are refs ever going to call holdings on him this year? Like, I hope to God he gets some help, because he is getting held every single play. But either Rashawn Gary turns into that true alpha X factor for them on defense, or they get an outside guy after the end of this season or midway through that's going to push them over the edge. But right now, it's hard to make it to a Super Bowl without one of those guys. And we're seeing it year in and year out. Like, the 49ers, they had to go get Christian McCaffrey. They were not who they are now until Christian McCaffrey. They were solid. The Chiefs have Mahomes, and they're going to have him for a long-ass time. Like, who do the Packers have? Is he on the roster? Do they have to go get him? But, like, you look at the Vikings. The only hope the Vikings had last year was Justin Jefferson, and he actually won games for them. So that's what I want to see. Can they get away with not having that guy? I don't know. I think it's hard to do in today's NFL.
I completely agree. I think the way I'm thinking about it is, last year we just dropped so many winnable games early. Like, you look back at it, like that Atlanta game really sticks in my mind. Yep. If we can just start the season not looking like that team again, and because they were in a must, like for the back quarter of the season, they were just in a must-win situation every single week.
Yeah.
If we could just not have that pressure week in and week out, and not have that early, like you mentioned, it got to knock the rust off. I think that excuse isn't going to fly. Last year, you could say young team, still trying to figure it out. I think they have to hit the ground running this year and show consistently that, hey, there aren't going to be any lulls. Like, you're going to drop a game or two. Of course you are. But can you string together a full season of really complimentary, high-level-looking football?
I agree, man. And I think this is as much on the players as it is on the coaches, too. One thing that I think the coaching staff does well is midway through the season, as like they start getting tape on other teams, they're able to adjust and they are able to put in different plays that either saw from other places or like dig deeper into the playbook to say, hey, this look, if we get this, this actually might be viable versus this team because of what we saw in film in week 3, week 5, whatever. How can they do that in weeks 1 through 4 without having a lot of film on some of the teams they're going to play early? Like, that's what I want to see. I want to see them come out with an identity, with a plan that is not having a prerequisite of film already on these other teams. Can they go attack and just take advantage of those first few games? Because I think that's going to be the difference in the season. What does it look like weeks 1 through 4? I know the end of the season is what matters. But for this team specifically, I think the first month of the season really matters because, like you said, it is hard to be in must-win football for a long time. And you look at the Vikings were in, they were basically in must-win 2 seasons ago when they won all these crazy-ass games with a negative point differential and still, like, were a decent team. It's like, you don't want to live in that world at all. It's hard to do that in the NFL. It's hard to do that consistently. So weeks 1 through 4, how creative can they be with the game plan to, like, set their own precedent of what they want things to look like without having to go into the reserves of, like, this team ran this in week 5. Let's pull it, make it our own, whatever. Like, let's go see them create their own version of what they want to be this year. And I think they'll do that. Like, I don't think that they're going to tiptoe into the season like they did last year.
Yeah. Well, Kurt, that's a full hour on the Green Bay Packers. People don't expect anything less from the two of us, but it feels good to talk football. And this just gets me even more excited for the draft. So we're going to be back the following week after the draft has fully played out. We'll break down everything, I'm sure. I mean, I can't remember. I think I mentioned this before, being this excited for a draft because we really have no idea what's going to happen. We have an idea of the first two picks, but no idea, really. After pick 3, it's a crapshoot.
Dude, as soon as you start getting trades into the mix too, it's like, it is fair game. It's going to be full fire sale. I can't wait to see it play out. I'm going to be in a different country around the world when this draft plays out. For everyone, we're going to be taking a mini break from pushing these types of episodes out until after the draft. I actually don't get back until, I believe, May 5th or 6th. I'm going to Indonesia on a surf trip with a bunch of guys. It's going to be sick. But I will be trying to get Wi-Fi from the boat to see what happens in this draft. And this is one of those things that I couldn't say no to. It was like once in a lifetime trip that I got invited to. But of course, it's during the draft. So we've had a lot of work going to this point. We've broken down a lot of players and have talked a lot of ball. And I'm excited to see how it all shakes out and get back and talk to you guys about it all.
I think that's totally fair for you. Anyway, I mean, it sounds like an awesome trip, but you have done so much great work leading into the draft, and I encourage everybody, go watch the wide receiver breakdowns, go watch the quarterback breakdowns. I personally think we're at our best when we can let things settle for a week or two anyway, because there will be no shortage of takes coming out the night of the draft, the week after the draft. We can sit back, watch the dust settle, and then come in, and I have a feeling, Kurt, you're going to be vindicated on a lot of opinions that you've had leading up to this draft that people are slowly starting to come around to, and so you're going to come back stateside, I imagine, and be like, where are my kudos? Because I told you all this. I told you so.
I definitely told you so. But no, that's what happens when you're early to the party. People want to point fingers and they want to say this and that. But eventually, everybody shows up to the party. And I'm excited to see everybody come around. I'm excited to see, because again, the whole perspective that I've been bringing to all the quarterback stuff, to the receiver stuff, to everything is like, I know what happens in the meeting rooms. I know how they talk about players from a closed QB room with head coach, OC, quarterback coach. Like, I know how Hall of Famers look at specific players and what they value in players. I know what their input looks like. And I take it from that perspective, and I basically say F off to any of what you see in the media narrative-wise.
Right.
And just, how does this guy fit as a piece into this puzzle that I believe this is the perspective people are evaluating from? And then I'll let it play out from there. And I'm not claiming to be perfect. I'm not claiming to be 100%, but I think my hit rate's a little bit higher just because I know the perspective that I'm bringing at it from. And I'm excited to see it play out because I think, again, every single one of these guys that we've talked about, we would not be talking about them if they did not have a chance to have a stellar career. Now, once they get where they're going, there's going to be a lot of other factors that play into that, and coaching and players around them and owners and all this other stuff that will then start to break down their situations and what are they in with, and giving them the grace and the courtesy and the slack there. Well, right now, it's just, what's this product? Who is he? What can he do? What's the best fit? Then let's go. But as you know, when we break down players in season, we're very player heavy. We're very much understanding what they're being asked to do, what they're expecting, when misses happen with certain quarterbacks. Like, all of this stuff is from a player's perspective. But right now, pre-draft, what are we looking at? That's all we're doing.
And I won't speak for you, but this seems to be casuals identify themselves season, because as a fan, I don't sit and watch the film to the extent that you do and break it down and watch what's happening and actually like judge these guys based on what the tape says. I myself, like many other casuals that I've seen online, and beholden to the smoke screens that have come out all this year. Like, you hear JJ McCarthy maybe going top three, you know, Bo Nix maybe going top 10. Like, teams are doing this on purpose. Like, people need to realize that teams are doing this on purpose. So just because
100%
your opinion, Kurt, based on what you saw in the film, not listening to what teams and agents and players are putting out, just because that's different and people are so caught up in this wave pool of like going back and forth because they're just following whatever the latest aggregator account has says, and just because it doesn't align with what you were saying doesn't mean that you're wrong or you don't know what you're talking about. I think it really catches a lot of, again, I'll call us casuals. It catches us, like, we get caught up in all of this, and every day we have a different opinion based on what the smokescreen of the day is. Meanwhile, I credit you for being pretty steadfast in your opinions on these guys because you've just been looking at the tape. You haven't been looking at all these different reports because, I mean, like, if JJ McCarthy goes top three, I think we're going to sit here and have the same opinion of like, look, this is what I saw. This is what I think is going to happen. Like, we'll talk about it, but it's probably not going to happen. And people get caught up in all that stuff. And I don't think it makes them any more right because I know they haven't watched the tape.
Well, I appreciate that. I think that's also like, look, man, I look at things very retrospectively when I'm breaking down guys. And you look at, like, look at last year even. Anthony Richardson, God's gift to football. He's a surefire number one overall pick. Will Levis, we've never seen anything like it. He is going top five, no doubt.
Right.
And I'm just like, where the fuck did that come from? I'm like, I've never, like, where did it come from, truthfully? Because I'm like, that actually happened. And then people are so quick to forget where I'm just like, dude, if you just watch the film, it's like, dude, this dude can play. And if he gets in the right situation, he'll be successful. And like, yeah, Anthony Richardson, super athletic, can throw far, like, has a cool skill set. There'll be another guy next year. Like, and that's the thing is, like, there will be another guy next year.
Right.
And there will be guys 2 to 3 years from now that we don't even know about. Then that's just the way it is. And as quick as, like, the hype gets up for the draft class, those guys come year two, if they do not play well, are going to be just as quickly looking at the door on the way out as the next guy coming in looking at the door on the way in.
Yeah.
And that's just the way it goes, dude. Like, dude, I remember sitting there in 2018 and I was in a draft class with Lamar Jackson, Baker Mayfield, Josh Allen, Sam Darnold, Josh Rosen, Mason Rudolph, Luke Falk, like a bunch of guys, right? And I remember all the stories being told about them. I remember where they were projected to go. I remember Sam Darnold being pegged to save the New York Jets. And I'm just like, dude, never had a fighting chance to save the New York Jets. Like, they sucked so bad. And it's just like the same shit happens with quarterbacks every year because a lot of the quarterbacks that are going in the top few teams are most likely going to bad situations.
Right.
Like, that's just the way that it goes. And they're also going in divisions where other teams have super talented teams and quarterbacks are judged off of wins and losses, not necessarily how they play. And then they get shuffled around, and then you have a Jared Goff that goes to the Lions after he gets traded after his first contract because they want to get rid of him, and then he leads a team to an NFC Championship game. It's just like, dude, quarterbacks play for so long, and it's just not all finite, and it's not all final, and where they go in the draft truthfully only matters for their first 2 years. And then after that, it's a game of shuffle and who wants who where and whose coach gets fired and goes somewhere else and wants to bring him. Like, it's just not what the public perceives it to be. And so I try to cut through some of these things that are just blatantly like public narrative.
Totally. And it's crazy how much impact the public narrative has. Like, I was listening to Todd McShay, and he was talking about Will Levis, where every year, you're exactly right, there is a quarterback that is making a late push to be drafted in the first round. And I think it was Will Levis that year. And then he slips out of the first round or gets drafted at the end of the first round. And then the narrative is he fell in the draft. He slipped. It was like, he only fell because there was a narrative being pushed that he was supposed to be higher. And it's just like, it's all so arbitrary and really doesn't matter and makes no sense because you're right. It's totally situation dependent. And then you get to the point where when a quarterback is drafted by a team as high as they do oftentimes, like, one, that team might not even love that quarterback, but they just need a quarterback. So they have to draft a quarterback that year. I was talking to a Steelers fan this morning where it was like, I was kind of giving him guff. I was like, oh, Kenny Pickett, whatever, didn't work out. But like, the draft class wasn't great that year. And of course, like, maybe in a normal year, the Steelers didn't have him with a first round grade, but they needed a guy. So what are they going to do? Like, they have to pick him. So it's just all so arbitrary at the end of the day. I mean, I love how you break it down in a more objective fashion.
Thank you. I appreciate it. And, you know, I think the biggest part of it all is, like, you have guys like Will Levis. He was never a first-round pick in the NFL's eyes, ever. And if he was, he would have been drafted in the first round. And the public narrative is the guy that fell out of the top five, he was never there. That was all made-up bullshit. And so I look at the same thing with Drake May, and we'll find out what happens, what teams think of him in the draft this year. But, like, look, dude, the public narrative was that he was a top five pick last year. That was the public narrative. There weren't teams talking about him being a top five pick last year. Nobody's talking about him because he wasn't even coming out in the draft. So people are now watching him and now seeing what's going on. And, like, dude, is he super talented? Yes. Can he be a top five guy in the draft years from now? Yeah, he can. But, like, we will see what NFL teams think of him and which team wants to put the fate of their franchise in a guy that the public deemed as the savior. And it's the same thing. And so when he goes wherever he goes, assuming it'll be after the top five or whatever, like, the draft doesn't actually matter. It's teams that, like, you know what I mean? It doesn't actually matter. It does because you get the certain guys, but the draft doesn't determine the outcome of someone's career as much as, like, the right coaches in the right situation and, like, the actual slot of the pick. Saying someone was a top five pick, a top 10 pick, doesn't matter. It's what's this guy's situation? Can he stay healthy? Does he have a coach that's going to stay there for a few years and is actually a good coach? Or does he have the carousel for a few years? Like, the draft positioning, the number that you're picked with, is not what matters. Right. And that's what the public's tied up in. Is like, oh, we got this dude with number 8 overall. No, you just happen to have the number 8 overall pick and you happen to pick that player. It does not mean he was the 8th best player that day or in future days. And I think that's the stuff that, like, everyone needs a list. Everyone needs a ranking. Everyone needs a comparison where, like, dude, these guys' careers play out. See where the chips fall, where they end up. But, like, most of these dudes are going to be on a different team in 2 years to 3 years. Yeah. Like, it just is what it is. And then maybe they'll get their actual career started. Like, it's just wild, dude.
Well, you made my point for me that it's going to be great when we can come back. You're back from Indonesia. Little salt in your hair, and we can break down the draft a couple weeks after and, like, really get into it instead of having this hypothetical talk, because I mean, this year more than any year, it's been that's mock draft stuff. Season. I know it is. So I'm excited for that.
Yeah.
Make sure to follow along. I'm sure Sleeper NFL will have all of the stories leading up to the draft, all the picks the night of the draft. Make sure to follow Pocket Present so you know when we're back, and we'll see you guys next time.
We got action, baby. See you guys. Thanks for